Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, motivation and inspiration. Coming from a person who went through 13 torturous years, there is no prison or prison conditions in the United States that could match what my guest, Rian Shoot, has gone through. 13 years in what the world's most renowned and brutal prison system is, according to human rights organizations, the Chikarubri prison in Zimbabwe. What did he learn from being in there? How can it help those suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and those who are incarcerated now? We have a lot of people listening to this program from the prison system, Rikers Island and Queens House Detention and many other systems. I know because I get the mail and I answer all the mail personally to try to help them. You'll want to pay attention to this interview today. And for those of you who believe that much of your life is based upon a mental imprisonment, those who feel trapped in loveless relationships and in a harrowing situation, this will be an important interview. Then we're going to have an exclusive interview, something that will surprise people who never put these pieces of the puzzle together. Well, my guest, Grant Smith, director of the Washington-based Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Policy, he did put it together. He's written for the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Jewish Daily Forward, the New York Times. He has also written for the U.S. State Department's Washington File. And he's going to talk us about how Prime Minister Netanyahu has a legacy. You won't know what this legacy is, but it's going to surprise you. That I promise. So I'm going to keep that a little surprise until a little later on. I have two commentaries today, one very short, one a little longer, both important. One, Hillary Clinton, the Queen of Hearts, by Michael Collins from Op-Ed, and then Dr. Paul Craig Roberts from Global Research. The collapse of the U.S. economy and what we can expect. And I want to do this commentary today because of a quote I read from Rubini, the professor at NYU today, who said, quote, "My perfect storm scenario is unfolding now." Dr. Doom, Professor Nouriel Roubini, says the perfect storm scenario he forecasts for the global economy earlier this year is unfolding right now as growth slows in the U.S., Europe, as well as China. In May, he predicted four elements: stalling growth in the U.S., debt troubles in Europe, a slowdown in emerging markets, particularly China, and military conflict in Iran would come together to create a storm for the global economy in 2013. And he said, quote, "That storm is unfolding now." He is correct, but his perfect storm, and what I'm predicting is a perfect storm, make a megastorm. I'm going to talk today about the latest on the solar storms, and they are happening now in different parts of the world that you don't hear about in the United States. We have a brand new article updating the solar storm that's coming in the next 9 months, or to 12 months, and how bad it is, and what it's likely to happen, and what your options are. Plus, I believe that it's not just about economic slowdown in Europe. I believe it's about civil war in Europe, social rebellion in Europe. We'll talk about that later on. New information. For years, no one knew, or at least none of us in the progressive movement knew, that behind the scenes in state capitals, ALEC, that's a group of individuals who come together from major corporations, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and they model legislation, meaning they actually write legislation. They sit with your state legislator. They get your state legislator to vote, a vote of confidence on the legislation, take it back into their state capitals, and then pass it into law. No one knew this was going on. Finally, because of some outstanding work done on behalf of some groups earlier this year, it was exposed. That's good. We've asked for a national boycott of ALEC and all of its member corporations. That's happening. New information today. Have you heard of the Multi-States Associates? It's a stealth lobbying group, and it is very powerful. It is flexible. It provides a full range, and it's changing how business is done. Bechtel, Honda, American Automobile Association, all these major groups are parts of it. So there's others. It wasn't just ALEC. No, there's several other groups out there. And I'm going to talk about the other groups that no one has discovered, that we're not aware of. Let me just throw some names at you. Let me ask, have you heard of these groups? They're just as bad as ALEC. Council of State Governments, the National Conference of State Legislators, the State Legislative Leaders Foundation. You should bring yourself up to date on them. ALEC may be the best known of those, but these are the ones who wanted voter ID legislation. These are the ones who killed any form of honesty in government, accountability in government. These are the ones who are doing union busting, overall deregulation. And so we want to let you know that ALEC is one, but there's others as well, and we should start to expose them and boycott them. As you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Always on health and nutrition, always something positive that can improve the quality of our lives. We've known for many years that the active ingredient in chocolate is very good for our heart and our blood pressure, and it has polyphenols that helps protect and repair the sensitive lining called the epithelial lining of our arteries. Well, there's new information now that if we use a freeze-dried raspberry leaf extract, that it actually enriches it and boosts the chocolate's functionality. This is based upon some University of Zagreb in Croatia. They used a small amount of this, which is rich in polyphenols and antioxidants, and it enhanced, quote, results indicate that the used concentrations of raspberry leaf extract are able to enhance it. So, hopefully then, those who manufacture the chocolate will also start to add in some natural raspberry leaf extract. It will enhance chocolate's already a substantial benefit to us. High doses of vitamin D in this meta-analysis can help you prevent fractures. This is good news from the New England Journal of Medicine. They did an analysis of 11 separate randomized clinical trials involving 31,000 people. This was done by a professor Ferrari at the University of Zurich in Switzerland. And they found that vitamin D between 800 and 2,000 units a day, I suggest 2,000 units, sustained 30% fewer hip fractures, in addition to 14% less fractures of other bones compared to the control group. Quote, our results make a compelling contribution to the existing data on vitamin D and fracture risk in men and women. The vulnerability to bone density loss and osteoporosis leave them prone to fractures resulting in thinning of bones. So here's the bottom line. If each day you're getting between 800 and 2,000 units of vitamin D, then you're going to be substantially less likely to have a bone fracture of any type, hip fractures, etc. Now, if you exercise vigorously and you take your dark green vegetables like kale or sea vegetable, and then you walk, and you walk strong, you're forcing the minerals like calcium, magnesium, boron, manganese into the long bones. That even gives you greater protection against bone fracture. If you take vitamin C and vitamin K, 1 and 2, that prevents fracture. So you see, inexpensive as it is, and easy as it is, there's no reason for this high incidence of bone fracture. Now, this time of year, you can get your vitamin D by spending a half hour with about one-third of your body exposed on a daily basis. So let's, because a lot of people end up dying from infections they get after they have the bone fractures. In fact, just in the last couple of weeks, a longtime friend of mine's mother fell at 85, and the mother was not into health and almost did everything opposite of what you should do and ended up with a fracture. Well, the fracture was bad, but then how the woman was treated in hospital care caused infections. The infection spread throughout her body. And had her children not involved themselves directly and threatened lawsuits against the staff for gross negligence, A, the mother would have died, and now the mother's out of harm's way. I sent them daily protocols and kept up on it. But what if you're not lucky enough to have children, adult children, who are advocates, who are into health, and know when a person's getting good care or not? You don't know what kind of care you're getting when you're not beside your mother. And what if you're not even aware of health? So we need more on that. We need to completely review entirely our medical industrial complex, every single procedure, but to help you see which procedure should be looked upon because they're danger, actually killing people, injuring people. I have a free report. It's called Death by Medicine. It took 5 years to do. I only used peer-reviewed literature. I only used information that was accepted by all the major groups within medicine, like the American College of Physicians and Surgeons. So when I looked at how many unnecessary surgeries are done, how many people die from the unnecessary surgeries, 12,000 per year, I only used their statistic. No one had ever put all the statistics before together. We did. And it shows that American medicine is the number one cause of death and injury every single year in the United States, yet we never talk about it. Cranberry products help prevent urinary tract infections. Now, there's a lot on this, but this is the latest in the archives of internal medicine, as published in Science Daily. Here's what it says, and I'll quote directly. Use of cranberry-containing products appears to be associated with prevention of urinary tract infection, and urinary tract infections are common bacterial infections, and adult women are particularly susceptible. Cranberry-containing products have long been used as a folk remedy. Dr. Wang, MD, at National Taiwan University Hospital and colleagues reviewed the available medical literature to reevaluate cranberry-containing products for the prevention of urinary tract infections. Quote, here's what they say. Cranberry-containing products tend to be more effective in women with recurrent urinary tract infections. And cranberry juice drinkers are at the best level of this. So here's the takeaway message. Cranberry powders are now very popular. There's nothing in them. They simply freeze-dry and pulverize the cranberries. No nutrients are lost. There's no heat involved. But they take away all the water. And when you take away the water, you're preserving the antioxidants, the polyphenols, the chlorophyll, the phytonutrients. In other words, everything that made the product good to begin with in its fresh form. Then you can add it to any beverage or product you want. I suggest, for women in particular, just to take a teaspoon, 1 teaspoon, of cranberry powder, organic cranberry powder, that has nothing else in it, no sugars, nothing, and put that into lemon juice and apple juice with some vitamin C. That will not only help prevent urinary tract infections, it will also kill candida. Candida in the throat, known as thrush, in the mouth, some little white patches you'll see in some people's mouths, and throughout the bloodstream. Because the side effect of having that candida is mental fatigue and brain fog. because candida are living yeast organisms, and the byproduct is they can go to the brain and create brain fog, a kind of a loss of being fully cognizant of where you're at and what you're doing. Clean up the blood and get rid of the candida, and this will do it. Vitamin C, lemon and apple juice with cranberry juice, and you're protecting your bladder in the process. And finally, green tea that I've been talking a great deal about, according to this study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, the current edition, and as reported by Reuters, quote, cuts the bad cholesterol, and major, that means it's going to help you prevent the risk of heart disease and other killers worldwide like diabetes. One more reason to drink your green tea, and this was based upon 14 separate studies that were analyzed, and they're looking at how much it took to drop the bad cholesterol. It doesn't take that much. And once again, I believe drinking one just right now at this time of the year, why don't you just make yourself some green tea, then make it into iced tea, then open up capsules once it's an iced tea of 200 milligram green tea and put like 5 capsules or 1,000 milligrams into a pitcher and then stir it around with some Manuka honey and then drink that as an iced tea throughout the day. It's the Manuka honey is antibacterial, antiviral, soothing for the throat, great for helping with infections, and the green tea is helping you on every level. All that's good. I'm Gary Nall. That's our health and nutrition report. Now, a few commentaries, too. Then we're going to take a break, come back with our first guest. But in between, if you have some thoughts you'd like to share on our commentaries from Professor Paul Craig Roberts from Global Research or from Michael Collins from Op-Ed, you'll be given the opportunity by calling 888-874-4888. That's our call-in number, 888-874-4888. First, from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, the collapsing U.S. economy. I'll quote this. Washington has been at war since October 2001 when President George Bush concocted an excuse to order the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. This war took a back seat when Bush concocted another excuse to order the invasion of Iraq in 2003, a war that went on without significant success for 8 years and has left Iraq in chaos, with dozens more killed and wounded every day. Upon his election, President Obama foolishly sent more troops to Afghanistan and renewed the intensity of that war, now in its 11th year, to no successful effect. These two wars have been expensive. According to estimates by Professor Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, Columbia University, and Linda Bilmes, when all costs are counted in Iraq, the invasion cost U.S. taxpayers $3 trillion. Same for the Afghan War, $3 trillion. In other words, the two gratuitous wars doubled the U.S. public debt. This is the reason there is no money for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, the environment, and the social safety nets. Americans got nothing out of the wars. But as the war debt will never be paid off, the U.S. citizens and their descendants will have to pay interest on $6 trillion and that is in perpetuity. Not content with these wars, the Bush-Obama regime is conducting military operations in violation of international law in Pakistan, Yemen, and Africa, organized the overthrow by armed conflict of the government in Libya, is currently working to overthrow the Syrian government, and continues to marshal military forces against Iran. Finding the Muslim adversaries Washington created insufficient for its energies and budget, Washington has encircled Russia with military bases and has put the encirclement of China in there, too. Washington has announced that the bulk of its naval forces will be shifted to the Pacific over the next few years, and Washington is working to reestablish its naval base in the Philippines, construct a new one in a South Korean island, acquire a naval base in Vietnam, and an air and troop bases elsewhere in Asia. In Thailand, Washington is attempting to purchase, with the usual bribes, an air base used in the Vietnam War. There is opposition, as the country does not wish to be drawn into Washington's orchestrated conflict with China. U.S. Marines have been sent to Australia and elsewhere in Asia. to corral China and Russia and Iran in a massive, which is a massive undertaking for a country that is financially broke, with wars and banksters' bailouts. Bush and Obama have doubled the U.S. national debt while failing to address the disintegration of the U.S. economy and rising hardships of U.S. citizens. The annual U.S. budget deficit is adding to the accumulated debt at $1.5 trillion per year with no prospect of declining. The financial system is broken and requires ongoing bailouts. The economy is busted and has been unable to create high-paying jobs, indeed any jobs, despite years of population growth. Payroll employment as of mid-2012 is the same as 2005. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, employment in 2011 was 1 million more than 2002. As it takes about 150,000 new jobs each month to stay even with population growth, that leaves a decade-long deficit of jobs of 15 million. And then it goes into inflation that is actually at 5% now, and the misery index, which is the sum of the inflation and unemployment rates. It got President Reagan elected against Jimmy Carter because it hit 22%. Now it stands at 27%. And politicians at the Federal Reserve are making the outlook even worse. At a time of high unemployment and debt-stressed households, politicians at local, state, and federal levels are cutting back on government provisions of health care, pensions, food stamps, housing subsidies, and every other element of the social safety net. These cutbacks, of course, further reduce aggregate demand and the ability of income-stressed Americans to survive. And also, they've cut the interest rate to zero, so that's how most people made some income, the interest on their savings account. Now it's zero. And now the bond market, where the government wants you to put your money, that's the new bubble, according to him. Quote, the Fed's debt monetization, or a drop in the exchange value of the dollar as other countries move away from its use to settle their balance of payments, could set off inflation that would take interest rates out of the Fed's control. And as interest rates rise, bond prices fall. In other words, bonds are now the bubble that real estate, stocks, and derivatives were. When this bubble pops, Americans will take another big hit in their remaining wealth. It makes no sense to invest in long-term bonds at negative interest rates when the federal government is piling up debt that the Federal Reserve is monetizing and when other countries are moving away from the flood of dollars. The potential for a rising inflation rate is high from debt monetization and from a drop in the dollar's exchange value. So, he's suggesting we pay a lot of attention. In conclusion, Washington is becoming an isolated and despised element of the world community. Washington has purchased Europe, Canada, and Australia, and the former Soviet state of Georgia, and almost Ukraine, and Colombia, and continues its efforts to purchase the entire world. But sentiment is turning against the rising Gestapo state that has shown itself to be lawless, ruthless, indifferent, hostile to human life and human rights. A government whose military is unable, with the help of the UK, to occupy Iraq after 8 years and was forced to end the conflict by putting the insurgents on U.S. military payroll. That would be the Sunni awakening. And to pay them to stop killing American troops, and the government whose military has been unable to subdue a few thousand lightly armed Taliban after 11 years is over the top when it organizes war against Iran, Russia, and China. The only prospect Washington has of prevailing in such an undertaking is first use nuclear weapons, of catching its demonized opponents off guard by nuking them out of the blue. In other words, by the elimination of life on Earth. Is this Washington's program? I don't know. What do you think? A short one, and this one I can assure you you're not going to have heard or seen anywhere. But it's something we should at least think about, and then you can share your points of view, from Michael Collins. Hillary Clinton acts like she runs the world and is out to punish any nation that gets in her way, including Russia and China. She's hell-bent on bringing NATO-style democracy to Syria at any cost. Take a look at how Libya worked out to understand her agenda and that the endless war faction. She has a very serious problem. She thinks that she is the ruler of the world, and those who disobey her will be punished, Russia and China in particular. Our chief diplomat behaves like a drunken bully, making rash demands and spoils for a fight with countries that can do us some serious damage. Over what? Regime change in Syria? Clinton is the tip of the spear for the project to control the Arab Spring movement. Her efforts have little to do with democracy. It's about controlling the agenda in the oil-rich Middle East and the effort to prop up the decadent Saudi royal family and other oil-rich leaders hiding behind the nebulous organization called the Gulf Cooperation Council. In a statement to the Friends of Syria group on Friday, Clinton insisted that others observe the, quote, norm of international law and human decency. She also made this bold assertion, laying bare the goal of the Obama administration, quote, we are focused on determining what we can do to try to hasten the end of this regime and to provide the circumstances for an effective process of transition and reconciliation, end quote. How does that fit into the norms of international law? The United States helped set those norms at the Nuremberg trial. They couldn't be more precise, quote, from the Nuremberg laws. Planning, preparation, initiation of waging of a war of aggression or a war in violation of international treaties, agreements, or assurances is a war crime and is a common plan or conspiracy involving any of those efforts, end quote. And then goes on to talk about how we support ethnic cleansing and we support getting rid of anyone who stands in our geopolitical way. Your thoughts? 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And our guests are standing by. We'll go to a break, come back in about 20 seconds and hear from you, and then two guests back to back. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We talk about the issues that others are not talking about it from perspectives that most wouldn't touch. In a moment, we're going to talk about a man who has a very inspirational story that I believe all of us can learn from. He is Rion Schut, S-C-H-U-T-T-E, and he spent 13 years in one of the world's worst, most renowned, bad, brutal joints in Zimbabwe. And what did he learn in that environment and that has actually helped him, strengthened him? We're going to find out. And how can that help people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder that so many American soldiers are coming back with and ending up suicidal or violent? How can that help people currently in our prison system? How can that help people who are just in bad relationships and feel imprisoned by them or work environments? All that. And then a newsmaker update from Grant Smith from Washington, from the Washington-based Institute for Research, Netanyahu's legacy. I'm going to tell you something you didn't know that's important. We have some people on the line we're going to go to. Let's say hello to Vic from New Jersey. Hi, Vic. Vic, you're on the line. Speak up, please. No? Okay. We'll come back. Let's say hello to Myron, our social media director in studio. Hi, Myron.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Excellent.
Great. I just wanted to update you on some of the numbers that are just coming in now. We're approaching fast 1 million minutes that people are listening in just on the phone that we have set up to listen in to the live stream. That number, by the way, is 832-280-0066. And they can also go to prn.fm/mobile to get our app. So those listeners are topping 30,000, and they just keep coming every day. And as well, your Progressive Commentary Hour on Monday nights, where you do long-form investigative reporting, that's getting a weekly coverage of over 30K as well of downloads.
We're very pleased about that. I'm happy about the phone system because so many people had to rush out to their cars and listen to the show during the lunch hour or stay locked in their, home near the radio. But now it frees them to be anywhere and hear it in North America, including Canada. So we're happy about them being able to do that. And I was told the number is closer to 50,000, but those are substantial numbers. Or put a different way, on some non-commercial radio stations, that's more than the entire 24/7 live listeners, and we have that listening on the telephone. So just one of the vehicles. So it's helping people, and it's showing you where radio is going. It's going away from land-based stations. And my suggestion for those who are paying very high rents and lots of overhead, think about the Internet. It's the future. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Gary.
And let's go over and say hello to my guest who's standing by. Nice to have you with us, Rion.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. Rion's website is Rion, R-E-O-N, shoot, S-C-H-U-T-T-E.com. His book is Set Yourself Free, Breaking Out of Your Personal Prison Through the Power of Choice. First, please tell us about your incarceration. Why were you incarcerated? What were the conditions that you found yourself in this prison in Zimbabwe, which we checked with three different human rights organizations. It listed as one of the worst prisons in the world. And then how did you rise above all that to become a better person?
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, Zimbabwe, Chikurubi, the prison's name is Chikurubi, is one of the world's worst prisons, and I still don't know how I survived. But let me tell you how I ended up there. I was a soldier in South Africa, in the South African Defense Force. I was a Special Force soldier for 16 years. And 1990, when South Africa handed the power over to the new government, my government told me, war's over, go up, close operations, and come home. And my field of operation was Africa. I worked in 13 African countries fighting guerrilla war, and my mission was seek and destroy. So in 1990, the powers that be decided that the war was over. They told us, go, close operations, come home. My final mission was to be Zimbabwe, which is a neighboring country to South Africa, a country that I've worked in for many years. So it was the end of the war, and I didn't think much of it. Was to be my final mission, but I just didn't know how final it's going to turn out to be. Went up there. They were waiting for us. We were sold out. Two of my buddies got killed. I got captured, wounded and captured by the Zimbabwean Special Forces. And in the military tribunal, they sentenced me to 26 years in prison as a South African spy. Now, Gary, I was never a spy. You know, James Bond's a spy. I was just a soldier, and when I got captured, it was during the transition of the government, so obviously South Africa denied me, my old government, the new government didn't want anything to do with me, so I fell through the cracks. When I arrived at Chikurubi, I learned that I was the only white male amongst 5,000 black male prisoners and 2,000 black male guards. Now, that in itself doesn't mean much, but in Africa, especially if you're South African and you're a Special Force guy, that really spelled some trouble for me. When you enter Chikurubi, they strip you naked. They take away everything. Take away your clothes, your possessions, your humanity, your dignity, and very slowly, your life. The survival rate in Chikurubi when I entered there in 1990 was 10%. It's much less than that now, currently. They put me into a cell that I shared with 49 other guys. We were 50 guys in a cell that measured 6 by 8 meters.
6 by 8 meters, that's 18 by 24 feet. That's, yes, and how many were in that?
50.
50 guys?
5-0.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty tight, you know. I mean, it was crowded.
And how were you how were you treated in prison? Were you beaten?
Every day, as part of my punishment,
and
quote unquote.
Tortured?
Yes, sir. I still suffer from a lot of that stuff, you know.
Electric shock, pipe beatings, drowning?
Well, your waterboarding isn't something new. They practiced that way back in Africa, back in the 90s.
Were the other prisoners subject to this, or were you isolated for your previous work?
I was isolated. In general, everybody, but I was isolated because I was, you know, I was like a spotlight. I attracted attention from everybody, and everybody wanted to get to me. We were fed once a day, a half cup of rice and a half cup of cabbage leaves. We were kept locked up 24/7, naked. At night, they'll just give each guy three blankets. There's no pillows, there's no toilet paper, there's no pens, no communication with the outside world. It's a concrete little box with 50 people squeezed into it. And the only time they open it is to feed you once a day and when they came to beat us.
Okay, and there's 90% death rate from the conditions that you're in for everyone there.
Oh, yes.
And now
sir.
It's, I believe I was told it's 96%, so only 4% of
it's
survived.
Yeah, probably 96% now.
Okay. Now, you spent 13 years. Now, here's where we have to go with this. What's important is what lessons did you learn there that you're able to share with us now to help those of us who have gone through any form of extreme trauma, anxiety, that we could use those lessons from?
Gary, yes, you know, it was a time of change for me. I realized that in order to survive that place, I had to change myself, not the place. Because, you know, there are times in life when you're in a situation and in circumstances that you can't change. But I discovered that you can change your attitude towards the circumstances. You know, it's not so much what happens to us in life, is but how we respond to what happens and react to what happens to us. And that's one of the vital lessons I learned, that, you know, we have a choice. We many times in life we stand in front of something, like when I was in Chikarubi, and I said, well, I didn't have a choice, you know. I'm a soldier. I was given orders in that, but I had a choice. All along I had a choice. I could have said no, but I didn't. So it was, you know, due to my choices that I landed up in Chikarubi. And then when I was there, I realized that, you know what, I can't beat those people. They were going to kill me unless I changed my attitude. And that, you know, for many years, Gary, I lied there at night, and like we all do when we're in trouble, you know, you're always praying, and why me, why is this happening to me, I'm not a bad guy, you know. And one night I was lying there, and I was feeling sorry for myself and complaining and crying and again asking why, when suddenly a little comic strip I saw as a child came into my head. It was just two blocks. It's about this old Viking warrior, Hagar the Horrible. You must have heard about him. And Hagar was standing on this high mountaintop, and it was pitch black, lightning, hail, thunder, snow. He was getting hammered, and he had his hand outstretched to heaven, and he was asking, why me? The second picture I remember was pitch black, little white bubble from heaven, two little words, why not? And that was, I think, my ultimate moment in that prison, when I realized, I looked around me, and people were dying literally right next to me. We had 2 to 3 corpses in that room every day. And all I could think of is, why is this happening to me? You know, I wasn't taking notice of the people dying around me. I had a support group that spanned the world that was fighting for me. These guys had nobody. Some of them are in there for 15, 20 years without a trial. They have no money. They have no people. Nobody cares. And you know, I started concentrating on them and their problems. I started helping some of them die, you know. And my problems just became so much less. I just saw it in perspective. And what I realized ultimately in Chikarubi, that doesn't matter what happens in life and where we go, we always have choices. And if we can just realize that we're in charge of our lives. Many times we think we're not. We think it's the government, it's my family, it's my husband, it's my wife. No. We are ultimately in charge. You can change anything in your life at any given moment. You've just got to realize that you've got to say, I want to change this.
Bradley,
you know,
one second, I want to tie something in here.
Yeah.
Rione, Bradley Manning, in my opinion, is one of the individuals who woke up one day and saw that what he was doing before was saying, I can't control the outcome, I'm just a soldier, I have to do what I'm told to do. And whether he realized that the Nuremberg Code says that you also have to report on what you see that is our crimes. And think of all the and he did, look at the consequences. But look at all the soldiers coming back now who knew that things they saw or participated in Iraq or Afghanistan or elsewhere were wrong. And instead of standing up in that moment and knowing there would be a price to pay, but accepting you had some choice, you didn't have to, you know, you didn't have to kill someone, they chose not to. Now they're dealing frequently with, they can't get out of the, they can't get it out of their mind. So I'm asking you, since we're not here to judge what you did as a supporter of apartheid and how many people you inflicted pain and death upon in the name of your belief system, that is a separate argument. We're here today to learn, what can you tell us about what you learned when you finally came to grips with the fact that you now had choices, and before you would have excused yourself for not having those choices, for all the people who are in prison now, for all the people who've got post-traumatic stress disorder, and what part did forgiveness, which I believe is essential for releasing us from unhappiness and the anger we feel towards others and ourselves that frequently justify racism, that justifies hate, that justifies bigotry and prejudice, what role did forgiveness play, if at all, in your transformative process?
Thank you for that question, Gary. Forgiveness is ultimately the whole thing to change in your life. What I've learned is that the world views forgiveness in a different manner than I do now. Because we think in order to forgive somebody, we need to do somebody else a favor. We need to be holy or like Jesus. You know, we got to forgive. And that's a big thing, and you're doing it for somebody else. But what I learned is that forgiveness is setting yourself free. When you forgive somebody, you're not doing anybody a favor. You are helping yourself. You're setting yourself free. Because while you hate or you're angry or you're upset with somebody, those people are in control of your lives. That situation, whatever it is in control of your life. And sometimes it's years later, many, many years later. But you're still allowing that to control you. And by forgiving, you're saying, you know what? I'm setting myself free. That incident happened. It was bad, or it was what it was, but I'm carrying on with my life. It has no more control over me. And once you realize that, you know, by saying that and actually making that switch, not just saying it in your head and your heart, but actually making that switch, you know, life just becomes so much broader. Because by letting go of it, you know, we cannot walk forward, Gary, by looking over our shoulders. And yes, you know, that's life. That's how we learn. But by forgiving and moving on, you're setting yourself. So many people, when I came, I always say come back 7 years ago when I was released and I came back to this world, I met so many people, and I still meet them today, that live in prisons created by themselves in their own hearts, in their own minds. And whether it's a bad relationship, a bad job, something they've done or something they didn't do, you know, people imprison themselves. And the sad thing is these people don't even realize it. So many people, you know, come to me and say, Rion, I have this issue in my life and I don't know how to deal with it. And I say to them, but you don't have an issue. It's in your head. There is no issue. We create these situations in our heads. And then we suffer because of that. So it was one of my biggest things when those people came in the mornings to torture me and they left. As they were leaving, I would always, in my head, you know, I'd say to the Lord, I'd say, you know, I get everything you say. And I agree with everything, but forgive my enemies. You say I must forgive and love them. How can I love these people? And you know what came into my head? I did not tell you to like them. I told you to love them. And that was such a great moment for me, because that is what we should do in life. we cannot like each other. You know, everybody can't like everybody. That's just life. But you don't have to hate them. You can still love them without liking them. I mean, we've got, you know, extended families. There's always somebody there that you just don't like, but you love them. They're family. And if we can just do that to the world, why go into other countries and you know, start a war with them if they don't bother us?
I would offer a slightly different perspective, and I appreciate your insight. I would not suggest people love those who inflict pain and torture and genocide, murder, violence, whether it's an individual mugging someone, raping someone, or it's a person in the armed forces in a drone room out in Nevada killing a group of people at a wedding. I would say try to understand them. Not to love them, not to hate them, understand them. It's the understanding that allows us then not to be reactive in our emotions for an eye, and then end up with the stupidity of having now impacted, having a negative impact us in such a way that we double down on the negativity. We're out of time, Rion. One last thought. There was an American here who was a member, one of the founders of the Crips. There was the Crips and the Bloods, and two notorious street gang. They'd done a lot of damage, still do, a lot of harm. And yet one of the founders who went to prison and went to death row ended up having being a born-again Christian, turning his life around, writing books for kids, lecturing, and the lecture tapes would be sent out to gang members. He got a lot of people out of gangs. He turned a lot of people who would otherwise get into gangs out of. And yet Arnold Schwarzenegger, a pure opportunist, adaptive, aggressive life force, decided to take his life to show that, you know, the ultimate punishment. And I'm thinking, don't hate him for what he did. Understand what he is doing now. He's saving lives. There is redemption in the ability to turn your life around. Yet in our society, we don't appreciate people who commit a crime and then want to turn their life around. We're into punishment, and that's unfortunate because they executed that man, and I'm thinking, okay, so you killed a man. So there's one less person on death row. How many other people whose lives would have ended up in committing crimes would not have had he been given a chance to go into the communities, even under supervision, and got out there and say, hey, I was one of you. I founded these gangs. Here's what you got to know. It's just the limitation and stupidity of these insecure men and women making reactive choices that don't help anyone, that harm us. I'm glad you turned your life around. I'm glad. That's why I invited you on the show. But for people to really get the full essence of what you've done, what you went through, your transformation, read his book, Set Yourself Free. Go to his website, RionSchutte.com, and learn more. Rion, thank you very much. And when you're in New York, please let me know. I know you're out there traveling now. You're in Nebraska. All the best, because you've got an inspirational message, and we need to hear it.
I appreciate that, Gary. Thank you, and thank you to your listeners. Have
All
a great day.
Bye. Now to our newsmaker. I wanted to get our newsmaker on today. Before the end of the show, he is Grant Smith, director of the Washington-based Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Research Policy, which is an independent nonprofit group that studies U.S. policy formation towards the Middle East. And he has come forward with an article. I read the article. In fact, he has several. And first, when I read him, I put him down and I went over to one of our scholars on staff. And I said, who is this man? And could this be true? This is an internet, because, you know, the internet is filled with a lot of nonsense also and misinformation. And it came back that, yes, he's very credible. And I said, well, then invite him on. So with that said, Grant Smith, nice to have you with us today.
Hey, thanks, Gary. It's great being on.
Grant, let me read the titles of your articles, then you take us in detail on this and show us your proof, all right?
Sure.
Netanyahu, the current ultra-war hawk in Israel, that wants to attack Iran and get us to do it with him, worked inside the nuclear smuggling ring. Quote, FBI partially declassified and released seven additional pages on June 27, 2012, from 1985 to 2002, investigation of how a network of front companies connected to the Israeli Ministry of Defense illegally smuggled nuclear triggers out of the U.S. The newly released FBI files detail how Richard Kelly Smythe, who was convicted of running a U.S. front company, met with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel during the smuggling operation. At that time, Netanyahu worked at the Israeli node of the smuggling network Hell Trading Highly Trading Company. Netanyahu, currently serves as Israel's prime minister, recently issued a gag order that the smuggling network's unindicted ringleader refrain from discussing Project Pinto. Then, AIPAC obtained missile secrets. Another article, Americans paid dearly to maintain Israel's nuclear secrets. So if what we are to understand is correct, and you and Mossad has long given marching orders to AIPAC, then you're telling us, and you have the documents to prove it, that we have been working with the prime minister who was illegally stealing nuclear parts and technology from the United States. And if anyone else did this today, they would be considered a terrorist and would be tried and either kept for life in prison or executed. Is that correct or not?
That is correct. And I think the important thing to understand from these articles and the declassified information they link to is that ever since its founding, the Israelis have used U.S. agents and a series of front companies, whether it was Materials for Palestine, Foundry Associates, Service Airways, MarTech, Helai Trading, Milchan Brothers, Milco Telegy. There's a long list of companies that were smuggling conventional and nuclear weapons-related technologies from the United States. Now, the Newsmaker piece from the 4th of July about Netanyahu's direct involvement in a nuclear technology smuggling ring was on the basis of April 16 and 17, 2002 counter-espionage debriefings with a man who ran the U.S. node of the smuggling network, which was known as Milco Technologies. Now, this Richard Kelly Smith had been found smuggling 800 nuclear triggers. He fled the U.S. in 1985. He was picked up by Interpol and returned to the United States in 2001. And before he was sentenced, when he had a lot to lose and not much to gain by lying to the FBI, he told them that his Israeli contact for the smuggling operation was none other than Benjamin Netanyahu, and he even named the operation's code word from the Israeli side, which was Project Pinto. So this particular document was something that the Justice Department and FBI fought against releasing. In fact, it went through two appeals processes, even into the Justice Department's review committee. It was filed as a mandatory declassification review, meaning that there would have been further appeals processes, and so they grudgingly released it. There are also hundreds of other documents in this file that they have not yet released, which we suspect are probably CIA files. But I think the message with this 4th of July antiwar.com piece about Netanyahu's involvement kind of shows a little bit about the hypocrisy of the current failing nuclear non-proliferation treaty, in which the United States continues to ignore Israel's nuclear arsenal while pressuring other states about their nuclear projects, whether they're peaceful or not. And I think it's also interesting in this particular case that the ringleader of the smuggling ring in the United States, a Hollywood producer called Arnon Milchan, who has denied involvement in this but who owns many of the companies involved, has never been forced to testify under oath or be interviewed under oath as Richard Kelly Smith was with the FBI.
Well, I appreciate you sharing this with us. At least this audience will know the truth. And I'm concerned because I believe that shortly after his reelection, we will see Israel attack Iran and the United States or NATO in backup position to support it without the consequence of the blowback that's going to happen to oil supplies and reshifting the geopolitical landscape, with Iran being supported by India, China, Russia, Brazil, and what that will do for everything that we're living through now, all because we're not don't have the courage to stand up to Netanyahu and hold him accountable and bring him forward.
Right. And I think it is a really...
Arrest him and try him on espionage charges.
It's ironic that if there is a war, it would be partially based on preserving Israeli nuclear hegemony, and Americans just have never received credible, due reporting about how that nuclear arsenal was really built. So they'd be disturbed if they knew, and they wouldn't put up with the current sort of false dichotomy that's presented in mainstream news about Israel being under threat when the exact opposite is true.
Grant Smith, you've done a remarkable piece of original investigative reporting. Expect the blowback from AIPAC and the Mossad and everyone else because of this. We're happy to have this exclusive interview in North America today. No one else in the American media has this. And we will post all these articles on our website today. And again, Grant Smith, who has his research and analysis about trade and law enforcement opportunity and all cost have appeared in antiwar.com, Financial Times London, Arab News, The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, The Jewish Daily Forward, The New York Times, especially publications such as U.S. State Department's Washington File. Thank you for sharing this insight with us.
I appreciate it.
Again, the headline, Netanyahu, Legacy of Smuggling Nuclear Materials and U.S.-Israeli Nuclear Connection. I'm Gary Nall. For those of you who are saying goodbye now, we will stay on because we're going to introduce you in a moment to Bearman. And if you do need to listen over the telephone, you can at 832-280-0066. Do we have Bearman up? Oh, okay. We don't have Bearman. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary.
By the way, just want our audience to know that I will be in Woodstock 7:30 for a free screening of the new feature film War on Health this Saturday at 7:30 in the evening at their civic room there. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gary, I'm sitting here with a copy of the New York Times from today, and right on the front page, something that you spoke about more than 2 years ago with Bill Falloon and others, drugs dispensed by doctors cost insurers dearly. And what they're showing here is that there are some drugs that cost the pharmacies 60 cents, and the doctor is charging a 333% markup, and they get kickbacks. It's absolutely amazing that this is going on in our time, but thankfully it's being exposed. You exposed it 2 years ago.
2 years ago, what we did is this. When someone asked me why am I opposed to the legislation being proposed that would become Obamacare, I said, first, it does nothing to prevent disease. Separately, it was written, the entire law, 2,800 pages, was written by a combination of over 400 lobbyists, including from the pharmaceutical industry, from the for-profit insurance industry, and for-the-profit hospital associations. As a result, we will not have any reduction in defensive medicine, nor in incompetent medicine, nor toxic drugs, nor exploitation of the patient by physicians selling drugs. Like oncologists can sell chemotherapy drugs for about $200,000 a year in extra income, and rheumatologists anti-inflammatory drugs for enormous amount of money. And none of this is being addressed. To the contrary, about $1.5 trillion, list that number again, $1.5 trillion a year is made from the for-profit insurance company, for-the-profit hospitals, and for-profit pharmaceutical companies that have overinflated the value of their profit scheme with no capacity to challenge it. And that means that half, literally 50% of our entire national $3 trillion health care cost have nothing to do with health, nothing to do with prevention, only have to do with profiteering. And until such time that you can have a panel say, why does it cost $1,200 to sleep in a hospital bed in New York City in one hospital for a night? Why does it cost $227 to have the third best-selling product in the United States when you can buy the generic 30-day version of it for under $4? How can you have a 300,000% profit margin and no one address that? Oh, it was addressed. They wrote the laws. So we've got to start over and truly provide unique care, including single profit, single payer, and support prevention and support no-fault insurance for doctors, so we get rid of defensive medicine and get rid of bad medicine. And until we do that, everything is simply smoke and mirrors. We're out of time, Luann. Have a nice day, everyone.